Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. I had the honor of sitting down with legendary jazz fusion drummer Billy Cobham. He's had a remarkable career, starting out with Horace Silver, going on to play with John McLaughlin and Mahavishnu Orchestra. So he starts out with his childhood.
So yeah, I started at about 3 or 4 years old. That was 1947. I went to New York with my folks and went to school at the School of Performing Arts, continued to build on my rudimentary skills during that period. After that, it was all about the Army, playing in the United States Army Band between 65 and 68. That's when I got out. Next thing you know, I'm with Horace Silver, which was my first major gig after the military. And my first recordings were in the middle of 68. Actually, that whole year was like a big eye-opener for me. And with doing performances with people like Dr. Billy Taylor and subbing for Grady Tate. And, you know, it's just a plethora of different things that happened. Went out to Europe and toured with Horace Silver until December of that year. And then after that 69 was Dreams. 71 to 73 was Mahavishnu Orchestra. And then I had my recording, Spectrum, and fast forward to now.
Billy sure had a whirlwind of events in his life as a drummer. And I couldn't help but ask him what his influences are, because he's such a great drummer, and it seems like a lot of what he's done is kind of reinventing things.
Yes, I had a million of them, or it would seem to me, because I just listen to anybody and everybody. And there are a lot of people that I listen to. Okay, so names: Elvin Jones, Max Roach, Roy Haynes, Louis Belson, Buddy Rich, the usual suspects. And my colleagues, I mean, I just keep an open ear, not just for the good things that they did, but the things that I didn't seem to understand. I think I've stolen from everybody somehow. In a way, I'm getting a return of the favor. If people are taking stuff from me, it's not necessarily like it's mine. They saw something that I did that they felt it could fit their repertoire. Cool. I'm honored. Most of the people who I paid attention to turned out to be, most of them, the right people for the right reasons. Being observant, I guess I was gifted to do that. Yes, still made a lot of mistakes and still do in trying to hone my craft, but I'm pretty confident to be a little bit hesitant before I get into something that I'm not sure about. And that's helped me a lot. So I can observe, I can try, I can test, maybe get burned, but understand why I got burned and try to make an adjustment if I can. Not leave it alone until I feel I am seasoned enough or mature enough to understand what I'm doing wrong. Some things, like I said, that didn't make any sense to me were like, if I'm a right-handed player, why would I have to play the hi-hat with my right hand when I could play it with my left hand? It was like, no, that's because that's not how it's done. I said, oh, okay. So let me just learn both ways, and then I can play the hi-hat with the right or the left. And then it was about proving it. And it's always about talking and talking, and I can, and I'm going to do, and I'm going to, and then you do it. And all of a sudden, it's more like, well, you've done this. Yes. And now I'm onto this. Now I'm doing something else, but I'm not talking about what I'm doing. I'm actually doing it. Or some people say, walking the walk as opposed to talking the talk. That's where you want to be. And so it's easy, the background and all of that. It's coming from experiences that I've had with quite a few different artists in support of them. Interestingly enough, very few, unfortunately for me, have been singers. Just because my direction wasn't really a supportive player in that way, they need you to help them get over, to help them to present their ideas, not just with words, but the phrasing and all of this. And that's another world, and not to be taken lightly. You've got to focus on that. The instrumental side was much more my thing, and so that's why I specialize in that more. It was there, and I felt most comfortable with it, not just in jazz, but I'm from a Latin American country. It's called Panama. The feeling the African music, the African influence is very, very strong. So I was very comfortable with that. You know, I had no choice. I just went that route.
And we are so glad you went that route, Billy. Now, being such a fusion head and loving progressive music, I wanted to see what roads led him to meet John McLaughlin and get into Mahu Vishnu Orchestra, which eventually led to his groundbreaking record, Spectrum.
I knew John in England. First date that I did with John, recording-wise, was with a French poet in Europe. And then after that, I started working with him with other people, along with Miles. The Anderson tapes for Quincy Jones in New York at A&R 48. We just sort of like hitting and missing. And I was kind of part of a community of musicians who were just somehow trying to find their way. One was named Joe Zavinu. Another one was Wayne Shorter, Dave Holland, and all. And so Larry Coryell, and we used to come together from time to time and just jam. And John was there. And this one particular time, he came to me after the recording session. He said, I want to go over some tunes. And I got some time. You busy? And normally I wasn't. I was subbing for whomever, and Mel Lewis or anybody that would get me a gig. But I said, yeah, I'm in the daytime, I'm here. You know, so it was a time that when I was young enough and strong enough to just go on a whim. And we played. And we kept playing, and the next thing you know, I was given an offer to put together a band with him, and other guys came in. Jerry Goodman came in after me, and we started to work together on a project with Charlie Hayden and John called My Goals Beyond. Jan Heimer came in. We started to rehearse in earnest for some concerts, and finally Rick Laird came in and took the bass chair, and we played. Marquette University was our first concert ever. And that was in, I think, 1971 in the spring. And we just went on from there. I first thought that I would be with Mahavishnu through 1973, which I was. And we'd probably take a light break and then start again in 76 or so, only to find out that I was let go. And that was with a pink slip that says, you're fired. So that was the end of that. Or at least they gave me a notice that we will not be continuing with you. I decided, okay, I've been recording in the studios for a while. I'll go back to the studios if I can, but I'll need a calling card. So I decided to make a record just to show everybody what I might be capable of doing, where I am now as opposed to before, kind of a sampler. And that ended up being a record called Spectrum. And so that was Tommy, Jan, Lee Sklar. And so we just went in and did it. I produced it with a guy named Ken Scott.
What a fantastic recording team. Jan Hammer, Tommy Boland, and Lee Sklar. You couldn't go wrong with that. Now, Billy's albums always marked great playing and also great guitarists like John Scofield and John Abercrombie.
Abercrombie was going on to do some things with Jack DeJohnette, and he recommended Scofield. And Scofield, we worked together through 1976. With George Duke, and then I ended up with Charles Singleton and Ray Mouton from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and a band out of New Orleans, really, with Alvin Batiste and Tom Coster from Santana, who had left Santana. And we worked for a while, and then I ended up with Dean Brown in a band with Tim Landers, and I worked with Barry Finity. We made a record called Flight Time with Don Gralnick. And, you know, it just sort of went on like that. You know, it was like one player after another, but people were connected. You know, we'd run into each other and we'd find that we had something in common that was positive, and we could, you know, make good music. So that was that. We did it. Yeah, I play marimba, play piano. All of my albums are written myself. I've covered some tunes like the Anita Baker tune that was a hit, or an Earth, Wind & Fire tune, or a Prince tune or something like that. But very rarely do I do anyone else's music. Or I had Sheila E. on one of my records, the tune that she had done. Normally, most of the material is mine, my compositions.
Now, that really impressed me, because not many drummers really write their own material. They are always subject to a guitarist or a keyboardist writing material. Now Billy goes on and tells me his relationships with various drum manufacturers like Tama and Mapex.
Started with Tama in 1977. I went until 1986, and then I stopped with Tama and started to work with Mapex from about 1989 until 1996 or 97, and then I went with Yamaha. Yamaha lasted until 2014. And then I went back with Tama again. Tama had their 45th anniversary or so, and I ended up coming back in to celebrate. Me and Don Famularo, maybe Lenny White, the guy who played drums with the Police. The four of us I knew were there, but me and Don were the first two guys there at Tama back in 1976, 77. And so we just came back, and I decided to stay. You know, the state of the music industry now in terms of making instruments and all, it's a microcosm in comparison to what it used to be. There's no reason to change. So I have my five sets of Bavinga around the world, and that's what I use when I tour.
Billy's absolutely right. The musical instrument manufacturers have undergone a huge change and have downsized quite a bit in the past decade. Now Billy tells me his new album releases and explains his new orchestral music that he performs live.
Released an album called Tierra del Fuego. I have an orchestral book, and that means that everything that 15-piece big band to a full-size 60-piece orchestra, and I have orchestrations for that. And so these are things that I do outside of the United States. I mean, any place from Australia to Dubai, Singapore, or a teaching book, things like this, of my works, Music Minus One recordings. So I continue to archive and do all of this on my own, because at least I know who to blame if I make a mistake. Work with different orchestras, like in Austria or Amsterdam, or any place, really, you know. Tolvan in Sweden or in Norway, the radio bands. There's an album called Broad Horizons I did with the Frankfurt Radio Jazz Orchestra. You know, my music, again, that's orchestrated for strings and all of this. The unique thing is that, yeah, I come with my band. We play, it's kind of a concerto for band and orchestra, and we use the local orchestra, the radio orchestra or the community orchestra, and everybody wins because they're working. And the challenge is to play the music that I've written. It's been designed specifically for a certain amount of pieces that they provide, and musicians who can play them, of course. My band, the band that you'll hear in Tierra del Fuego, that band with two keyboardists and electric bass and my drum set and one guitar. And then there's, like, say, the National Orchestra of Moscow. That's what we do. We play all together. Pleasure's mine. I mean, it's an honor that anybody would even listen to my stuff, so I'm ahead already.
Billy was such a humble and wonderful man, and considering all the great music and unbelievable people that he's performed with, it's amazing. And now I'm going to play a new track from his album, Tierra del Fuego.
Hi, this is Billy Cobham, and you're listening to Guitar Tracks on WFIT Radio.
Yeah, that is Billy Cobham, Cat in a Hat. And before that was the famous song Stratus. I love that track, featuring Jan Hammer and Tommy Bolin.